Pensacola's first choice for morning news, traffic, sports, and talk. The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Good morning, Pensacola.
Finally, we placed forward the group came forward that was interviewing for the police chief. They have done their interviews, their second round of interviews, and they have identified three individuals that they felt were the top three. And I've talked with Keith at length. I talked with Keith and Ted Kircher about this, and the team, the five of them, they said they all three of these were consistent in everybody's top three of their assessment. Not maybe that they were all the same number, but they all three were in the top three of all five. So there felt like there was a there was kind of a clear delineation between these individuals.
So this is yesterday, Mayor Grover Robinson saying that the top eight candidates have been evaluated and cut down to three, which were reported last week. As you, if you listen to this show for any period of time, you know I kind of have some strong opinions about this, because current acting interim chief Kevin Christman is not on the list of the top three. He was in the eight of the semifinalists, you might say, but he was not in the final three. There's going to be a public forum coming up next week, and you can submit questions online at City of Pensacola by Sunday, and then they're going to ask these candidates and talk with them and find out, you know, how they answer sort of in real time with the mayor. The mayor has not been involved in this process so far, other than to pick the advisors who would be making the process selection cuts. Jenny Craner, Pensacola Fire Chief, Keith Wilkins, City Administrator, Kareth Fiddler, Assistant City Administrator. Who's the HR guy's name? It suddenly escapes me. I don't know him as well. And then you have Susan Wolf, the city attorney. But basically, they had a, you know, national search firm go out and look and did a look, and they came back with a bunch of people, and then other people applied, and they cut down to a bunch, and then they cut down to eight, and then they cut down to three. And, of course, Kevin Christman is not on that list. And I have been very critical of this decision, and for a variety of reasons. You know, Christman is known. Christman has the experience. Christman's next in line. Two former chiefs believe in him, Tommy Leiter and Chip Simmons. Pretty much everybody that I know at PPD adores and admires him and thinks that he would do great. And apparently even the mayor thinks that Kevin Christman is great.
Keith and I met with Deputy Chief Christman. Obviously, there's a lot of questions. We absolutely want, he has a place at Pensacola Police Department, and he has done an incredible job, and we are very thankful for the service, and he will continue to provide service. Chief Christman has done an incredible job. Kevin's a great police officer.
And not only is he a great police officer, he's done an incredible job, but as the mayor acknowledged yesterday,
I did ask, and they said clearly all eight were very effective and certainly could do the job. So we have from in there. So the issue is, can these three individuals work within what we need? And that's much of what my interviews and the finalist interviews looking to determine.
So what he's saying is everybody on this list, all eight, although there was one guy that wanted permission to come in and clean house and basically get rid of whoever he wanted to get rid of, and that moved him to the bottom of the list, so he's not going to be one of the finalists. But the question really is, well, were these top three really the top three, right? I mean, that's what we all want to know from the outside looking in. And I'm going to tell you what I said the other day, but I probably didn't emphasize it enough. In life, you have to pick on the basis of uncertainty a lot of times. You know, you have to make a decision on the basis of stuff you don't know. And usually what that means is asking questions about who you're going to trust and what you know about those people. And I know there have been a lot of people who have been disenfranchised about Mayor Robinson. They just, you know, they liked him and they see him make a decision here or there, and there's been a lot of these decisions, and now he's not running for re-election. I think in part, frankly, because even he recognizes that there's a lot of those folks out there and running against who's likely to run against him. It's a partial thing that he went on vacation and had a bad meeting when he came back, and I think it's a partial thing about he doesn't like the job, like he has said, and I think it's a partial thing about, you know, look, there's a lot of people in town that have decided that they don't want him. So I'm going to put him aside for the moment. And I'm just going to think about the five people that are on this selection committee. I don't trust anybody more than I trust Jenny Craner. She's a person of integrity, period. That's it. Keith Wilkins, same thing. If I need to know something, I'll give Keith a call. Okay? I know Susan not nearly as well. But everything that I have seen of her indicates the same. I just don't have as much experience with her. And I know Kareth a little bit, okay? And Ted Kirshner, I just don't know him at all, okay? So what I can say for those three is I certainly trust their judgment. And so, I don't know. Obviously, if you heard me on Friday, I was extraordinarily frustrated about this announcement. And I have since been thinking about it a lot. And if all of them, and I specifically asked the question, it sounded to me like what he was saying was that all three of them were unanimously picked by everybody on the list. And he said, yeah, that's right. As in all five people on this selection committee picked all three of these finalists ahead of Kevin. And that's significant. Now, maybe you think that means that the mayor put his thumb on the scale. I just don't think he would. And I don't think that Keith and Jenny and, you know, Susan would take it if he did. Because I think they're the kind of people that if he told them, go do this process, do it fairly, be good jurors, and then he tried to influence it, I just don't think they'd stand for that. So here's what I think is going on. I think that Kevin Christman doesn't have as much experience outside of PPD in a variety of different things as maybe some of these other folks do. And to his credit, because he always just does what needs to be done. He hasn't gone out and tried to, like, groom himself for chief of police. And so it doesn't look like he has those things with, you know, outside experience or a variety of tasks like you might if you were trying to become chief. Because I don't think he ever wanted to become chief, quite frankly. I think that, you know, he's been kind of pulled up this ladder because everybody admires him and likes him, and he's the most capable around. But I don't think that he's just not an ambitious guy. And I mean that as a compliment. So I think there's that. And then I think you go on a nationwide search and you offer good pay, and if you're looking for the chief, you're going to find some people who are really high quality. And so here's my hope. Can I tell you this is a weird hope? I want to see Kevin be the chief of police. There's still a chance that might happen. When I asked the mayor yesterday, you know, whether he'd consider that, he said, here, I'll play the clip for you.
You seem to be hinting at the possibility that he could be reconsidered if you're not satisfied with the interviews with these three.
I think if the three can't work in the system we want to work in, then there is always that possibility. I want to be very clear. The committee said any of the eight who were the semifinalists could do the job. I mean, the question we're looking at is who can do the best job for the city of Pensacola. So we're going to continue to evaluate that.
Okay, so he's clearly leaving himself the option to add Kevin back into the mix, certainly after the interviews and possibly even before. You know, we'll see. So there's a variety of possible outcomes here, and I just kind of want to walk through them for a second. Possible outcome number one is that all three of these candidates, you know, come to town, don't do well, and the mayor decides to go with Kevin Christman. That's certainly possible. They may also, a couple of them, look at the political situation in Pensacola and perceive that, you know, maybe I don't want to come into a situation where the mayor's not going to get run for reelection. My job's only guaranteed for about a year and a half, maybe. And then at that point, I'm going to have to deal with somebody else who may not like me. Maybe, you know, maybe they start browsing around. They look at Sheriff Morgan. They decide, I don't want to work with him. Man, he looks like the front runner. I mean, who knows? Make decisions, especially if they're moving here and relocating. So that might happen. Other possibilities. maybe one of these guys does get the job and maybe they're terrible at it, you know, or maybe it causes friction in the department, or maybe officers leave. Because, look, if you're a police officer, you can find a job. And, you know, the worst case scenario for a lot of PPD folks is that they would have to drive all the way to the county, you know, to get a job, or to Santa Rosa. And I think Kevin's going to stick around. And if that's the case, he'll be chief in a year and a half. And then there's the other possibility, which is maybe one of them comes and gets the job and turns out to be spectacular. And I'm wrong in thinking that they wouldn't be, and the people who are opposed. So there's a lot of outcomes here that are sort of yet to be determined. I'm going to hold off a little bit. You know, I've made the request to see the evaluation forms. They're working on it because I want to kind of see what was said about these guys. But if it does come back that genuinely, you know, all five rank them the top three and the clear delineation is there, as the mayor indicated, between top three and the rest of the field, I have to make a decision about who to trust. And I still think it makes the most sense to have Kevin be the chief. That's based on what I know who I would pick, because I don't think there's any risk in that choice. And I think he's a known quantity and is known great. But I've pulled back to a point where I'm willing to watch a little bit more and see. Mostly because of the people that I trust on the selection committee. More than anything else. 437-1620.
437-1620. She keeps a Moet Chandon in a pretty cabinet. Anthony Cake, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building remedy for Christoph and Kennedy.
So the first tier is, let's call it Miller Coors. They brew it, they make it, they ship it to us. We're the second tier, we buy it from them. And then everybody where you guys buy beer from is the third tier. And then you guys would technically be the fourth tier, the consumers, right?
So this was from my Leadership Santa Rosa class last Thursday. Mike Johnson at Gold Ring Distributing. Very, very interesting stuff. Like, you know me, I can get into all the details and ask all the questions, but we got to learn a ton about beer distributing and the business and just like the business aspects of it. It was very fascinating. And then that three-tier system is a kind of a crazy system, but it is the way Florida operates, where you have the manufacturers, the brewers, and then you have the big distributors, and then you have the grocery store, basically, or the restaurant, and then there's us. We're kind of the fourth tier. The part of the argument in favor of this system is it protects us against price abuse.
So the advantages of that is it regulates pricing, right? I can't just give Walmart one price and, you know, Circle K another. I can do case deals so that if you buy more, I can give you a cheaper price, but it kind of keeps it across the board, and then whatever a retailer wants to do, they can do with it.
So then he caught my attention, and I thought this is kind of a fascinating thing.
So who's the leader of lost leaders in beer? Does anybody know? Where do you buy your best price beer at?
Davis, where's the cheapest beer in Pensacola? This is one of the distributors asking the question. Where's the cheapest beer in Pensacola? Because he doesn't get to control the price. He sells the same price to all the end tier three salespeople, you know, the point of sale folks.
I believe, and I've bought beer at quite a few places in town.
Way to brag.
I think it's actually one of those places where it's like you buy at cost plus 10%.
Okay, so grocery outlet, Grocery Advantage.
Yes.
Okay. Another possibility would be like the Navy base, you know, on
yes.
the base.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I'm restricted to that.
Right,
access.
Exactly. You don't have that access. So that was the first guess. Here, listen, this is somebody, you can barely hear it, but somebody says the Navy base, because I'm in this class with a lot of folks from the Navy.
On base.
That's actually not true.
Not it.
Grocery outlet?
That's me.
That's close, but not true. Grocery outlet doesn't sell for loss.
So grocery outlet and Grocery Advantage, similar, you know, they don't sell for loss. So where is the cheapest beer in town? I'll tell you in a minute. 623 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom with our headlines. Mark?
Now that was a tease.
Thank you.
I want to know.
I know you do. Do I ever not pay it off? I always pay off.
All right. Jurors in the Derek Chauvin murder trial back this morning to continue deliberations. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez on yesterday's closes.
The prosecution arguing that George Floyd died
due to Derek Chauvin's knee on his neck, but the defense coming back and laying out its case, saying that Floyd died due to multiple factors, including possibly drug use and underlying health conditions.
The jury wrapped up its first day of deliberations after about 4 hours. Exactly a month after the first day of spring, Old Man Winter still hanging around. Snowstorms on track to move into parts of Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri this morning, spreading into Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan later on. North Carolina.
Did you say snow?
Yes, I did.
Snow in snow. April?
Yeah, they're supposed to have snow up in my old stomping grounds of Kentucky.
Snow
sometime.
In April?
And it's Derby Week in, up there. So
that's not right.
No, it's not.
That's not right.
A North Carolina woman believed to have been the oldest living American has died. Hester Ford passed away over the weekend. She was 116, born while Teddy Roosevelt was president, got married at 14, went on to have 12 children.
All right, trivia question. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Who's older, her or President Biden? No, I'm sorry. No, it's not nice.
Now stop.
I know. But she was, what, 14 when she got married?
Yes.
12 kids?
Uh-huh.
I think,
at that time, getting married at 14, not out of the ordinary.
That's right. That's normal. Yeah. And I think if you do all the adding up, I think like 250 children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, you know, like in the plus 100 great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren, each category.
That's just amazing to think that somebody has seen all that history.
Right, to see it firsthand and to see all those people that you produced.
Mm-hmm.
To see them grow up and
many
grow,
of them probably gone.
Right. And to grow old. And I mean, there's nothing I can imagine more painful than losing, you know, seeing your offspring leave before you do.
Kids.
Right. But man, unbelievable. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 625 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. So where is the cheapest beer in Pensacola? Tell you in a minute.
Who's the leader of lost leaders in beer? Does anybody know? Where do you buy your best price beer at?
On base?
That's actually not true.
No? Grocery outlet?
That's close, but not true. Grocery outlet doesn't sell for loss.
Don't sell for loss. So who sells beer at a loss? Davis, you've had some time to ponder this. You have a possible. This is Mike Johnson at Goldring Distributing in Milton, East Milton.
The cheapest beer, I guess. What? At the house party where you get free beer?
You're totally lost on this, aren't you? It's kind of a fascinating thing. Here's the answer. You ready?
Dollar General is your best place to buy beer. And nobody knows they even buy beer.
Dollar General.
Well, you can buy a 15 pack of Miller Lite, which costs you $14.99, or you can sometimes get it for it's $14.99. You can get it at Dollar General for $12.99. They lose money on every case, and they have three or four different items in there that they lose money. It's absolutely amazing. Nobody knows they sell beer, but they sell the cheapest beer. So
okay, so I'm a journalist. What does a journalist do? You go look. So I went and looked. Mark, you want to weigh in on this?
I knew that.
Well, you didn't say it.
Well, you didn't give me a chance.
Doesn't count. Everybody knows it after the fact. No, it's true. I went and looked. Okay, so I went and priced at Grocery Outlet yesterday. And Miller Lite, sure enough, it was $14.80, now it's plus 10%. So, you know, that's pushing $17, right? Not quite $16. At Family Dollar, I didn't have a case. They didn't have a comparable for Miller Lite because Miller was actually had a cyber attack about a month ago, and it took out their distribution. So Miller is really down recently. They like he was saying that like he's empty on Miller, like it's not available. Anyway, but then I went to Dollar General, and sure enough, Dollar General $12.95 for a 15 pack of the 16 ounces. I mean, it's
wow,
it's cheap. And well, so if you want cheap, I'll call it mediocre because it's not the worst beer on the market, but it's not the kind of beer I drink. If you want, you know, big brand beer and you want it cheap, Dollar General. He's right. So now you know. I got lit up on the text line. You're killing us. Tell us the answer. Where's the cheap beer? Is it Publix? No. So there you go. That's my gift to you for the day, straight from the distributor's mouth, that the cheapest beer is at the Dollar General, which apparently Mark Jacobs already knew, but it was keeping it to himself.
I'm Jennifer Kishenko with Your Money Now. When it comes to taxes, not all states are created equal. Adam Data Solutions has crunched the numbers and determined the highest property tax rate can be found in New Jersey, Illinois, Texas, Vermont, and Connecticut. In New Jersey, the average property tax on a single-family home in 2020 was $9,196. The lowest average effective property tax rates can be found in Hawaii, Alabama, West Virginia, Colorado, and Utah. Federal safety regulators have sent a team to investigate the fatal crash of a Tesla in a Houston suburb in which local authorities say no one was behind the wheel. Investigators say no one was driving the 2019 Tesla Model S that ran off a residential road, hit a tree, and burst into flames, killing two men inside. But they're still trying to determine whether the electric car was operating on Tesla's autopilot driver assist system or if the company's full self-driving capability system was in use. On Wall Street, futures pointing to a lower open this morning. That's Your Money Now.
I hope the message is strongly being broadcast out there that we're having face-to-face summer school. We are not going to have remote. Virtual is still available. Transportation is available for face-to-face summer school.
Now, that was Chairman of the Escambia County School Board, Bill Slayton, the other day at the meeting they had last week to talk about the future of school, summer and fall. Joining us now, we have Superintendent Tim Smith. Tim, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Good to be back.
Yeah, great to great to have you. By the way, after I think you've been here in town about 4 or 5 months, I hope it's going well. It's certainly wonderful to have you, and I hope you're enjoying the job so far.
Well, thank you, and very much so. What a fantastic community the Escambia County is, and really enjoyed meeting people, so many caring people and dedicated to this community and to our kids and schools.
Absolutely. Now, we all have heard the news, or maybe we haven't all. I mean, if you pay attention to the media, you have, and if you don't, well, you know, we're trying to work on that. But coming up this summer, we are no longer going to be doing any of the remote learning. The remote learning is completely off the table, right? So what options remain for students for summer and fall?
That is correct. We are going to transition and take that blending remote model off the table as far as options. And that system was really designed back in the summer last year so that there was some flexibility for students. We had no idea at the time how long the pandemic was going to last. And so that system was designed so students could be in a remote platform and then transition back to campus at some time during the year. So now we have gotten to a point where it's time to really identify the two lanes a little bit more clear. So one is, of course, going back to campus, having the face-to-face option. And the other is going to a full-time virtual program. We have the Escambia Virtual School. There also is the Florida Virtual School. So it would be an either-or decision that families would make. Our Escambia remote program is available, and typically where that transition point is you don't want to be moving in and out of that virtual program,
right?
Because you get immersed in courses. So, you know, semester breaks would be if people do make a move from that, you'd want it at semester at the end of the year, not in the middle.
What is the difference between Escambia Virtual School and Florida Virtual School? I always thought of those as being basically the same thing.
They are very similar. Florida Virtual School is a very large organization, and they offer an array of classes. And especially in some of those specialty classes at the secondary level, the high school level, our virtual school is operated right here, and it gives students an option to have a local organization, and it does very, very well meeting the needs of our students. But really, it's just an organizational difference. Ours is operated by the school district, whereas the Florida Virtual is a very large statewide and actually beyond the state platform.
Oh, okay. And of course, people could always still homeschool. They could go to private school. There are some other options, but there's no more going to be that remote learning. So the question that that leads to, both for summer and for fall, is what's the new protocol going to be when a child tests positive for COVID-19? Because one of the advantages of having remote learning is that you can move on to remote if need be, if the circumstances fit, even for a short period of time, so the kid can still be taught while they're on, you know, isolation or quarantine. What's going to be the future protocol for that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because one of the things that has been very helpful in our schools is the contact tracing and having students who have contracted COVID to make sure they're at home. And that minimized the spread, certainly, in many, many situations. So we will continue to work on developing that as we get into summer school. There are some different options. One is, of course, communication with the teacher, take homework, email. So almost, if you really think about it, some form of a virtual through email and some of our electronic platforms that we have in place, such as the Focus program. So there will be communication. Right now, though, we will not have that blended approach. So you are correct. That will be a little different. It'll be a little bit more case by case situation.
I guess one of the other questions that I think a lot of people have is about masking. And you guys have made the announcement that masks will no longer be mandatory. They will be optional entirely at the student's discretion. Is that right?
Yes. So what we want to do is this summer, we want to have a very robust summer school program and really encourage students who may have struggled with remote learning or just fell behind and didn't learn all the standards to the degree that normally is done if we've had a struggling student this year. Many unique aspects to this year. So we want as many students as we can to participate in our summer school program. And there, just by nature of summer school programs, they're much smaller, you know, than a normal 100% full capacity school year situation. So it's going to give us an opportunity to really transition. And with those smaller numbers, we're going to make the masks optional. So if a student wants to wear a mask, they're certainly more than welcome to do that in the summer and certainly going into the school year. We want students to have that option. It's the mandatory aspect that we're going to gravitate away from and implement that in summer, and that gives us a transition period to work out any kinks and make sure we're ready to go in the fall.
Excellent. We're talking to Dr. Tim Smith. He is the superintendent for the Escambia County School District.
You know, our protocols will be consistent K through 12.
Okay.
You make a great point, because just by nature of our secondary schools too, there's more interaction, students changing classes,
right?
Activities, you know, and so forth. So that is something we have to continue to keep our eye on.
Okay, and it's because that kind of raises the question of the masking to me. If, you know, would there not be a merit maybe in having the masking at the upper age category? Possibly. Anyway, that's just kind of where my head is at on this thing. Switching just a little bit, obviously we recently did, assessment testing. There's been the announcement that those wouldn't count against students for either promotion or graduation. I sympathize with that, because the underlying assumption is that the testing is going to show bad results. The kids are way behind. We know remote was not as good as in-person learning, though everybody's trying to do their best. What my worry is that, are we promoting and graduating people when they just really haven't gotten the progress educationally that we would expect them to get to be prepared for the next level or to be graduated?
Well, and one of the most important things with that topic is we as a school system have to have a valid credit that is earned. And that's always an important protocol for us to have in place with every course at the secondary level. So what we're talking about is there are a couple courses that have state testing associated with it.
Uh-huh.
And students haven't had as many options. They won't have as many options, especially our seniors. They missed testing last year. And you can make up those tests. You can retake those tests as many times as possible to pass, to show, you know, proficiency in that course. But we still have the grades that students earn as well. And that's an important metric and an important measure that we do utilize. There are also some other measures that can be put in place with diagnostic testing and so forth that we can get a good snapshot to make sure that we're on target. So it's been a quirky thing with testing the past, with missing testing last year. And so having that flexibility is really important, and it really now falls on the shoulders of our schools to make sure that students are passing the course, that they are passing the standards and having a valid credit for each course that they're taking.
All right. And that makes sense, certainly, as well. So I appreciate that answer. And what we want to make sure people do is they register their kids, register your kids, make sure and let the school district know, especially if it's kindergarten and it's a first kid in the family, make sure that you go to the website and sign in and log in and create the account and do all the stuff that you need to do, because that's going to be essential for them planning and for them expecting to see your kid when he shows up for the first day or she shows up for the first day. Dr. Tim Smith, Superintendent for Escambia County Schools, thank you for the time this morning. And thanks for doing what you do to make our kids learn. We certainly appreciate the work.
Thank you, Andrew, and appreciate you giving me some time to share with you and the community.
Absolutely.
It's a fantastic community, and honored to be here.
Absolutely. 649 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. You know, I'm always telling you about Christina Leavenworth selling all these homes. You might think, well, how many homes? How many get many offers? Well, okay, here's an example. I was talking to her the other day, and she said in 1 week, okay, they had three homes that were listed. And just think about that for a second. In a given week, three homes listed. I mean, if you're selling 150 homes a year, right? Okay. So one home they put up for a list and had three offers. It's okay. Another home they put up had three offers. The third home they put up, it had 30 offers. That's a three followed by a zero. That's three tens. 30 offers on a home. The one that got 30 offers told Christina that she was thinking about doing a for sale by owner, a FSBO, at 197. And she was kind of glad that she called Christina, because they got her 237. So, 20% more. It's not too bad. And this meant that she was able to help her with the contract and go through the process and shepherd the whole thing and make sure that all the questions were answered, all that kind of. She was really, really thankful. About as many thank yous as offers, right? So that's the point. They get the results. Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenrinke Realty. To find out what your home might be worth, 723-9158, 287, 281 in Florida, 529 in Lee Vining, California. Good Lord. 215 in University City, Texas. In Navarre, 281 east at the Walmart, 291 Dime More up 87, 279 west at the Walmart. Gulf Breeze, Tiger Point, 284. Most everywhere. The good ones. 282 at the Raceway in Milton, 287 down Avalon, 281 at the Pea Ridge Walmart, 285 through Pace into Pensacola, 268 south side of 9 Mile at the Walmart, 268 same price at the Murphy in front of the Walmart on US 29. And coming in from the southwest side, 278 at the Navy Exchange, 279 at the TNC on Navy. These gas prices are brought to you by Pete Moore Volkswagen, with the lowest out-the-door price on your next new Volkswagen, PeteMooreImports.com. Mark Jacobs is in our newsroom this morning. Mark.
The fate of a former Minneapolis cop accused of killing George Floyd could be decided as early as today. Jurors in the Derek Chauvin trial got the case yesterday, spent 4 hours deliberating. They'll resume this morning. Former Vice President Walter Mondale, dead at the age of 93.
A Minnesota progressive who brought a new standard to the vice presidency, Walter Fritz Mondale catapulted to the national political spotlight in the 1970s and 80s.
That's NBC's Chris Clackham. Mondale, a U.S. senator from Minnesota, before serving as vice president under President Jimmy Carter from 1977 to 81.
You mean Fritz?
Fritz Mondale.
I never called him that.
You had to be a really close friend.
Yeah.
or the president.
Or the president, yeah. Right.
Queen Elizabeth's birthday celebration, a much more subdued event this year, of course, because of Prince Philip's death and the pandemic. The Queen turns 95 tomorrow, according to multiple reports, is foregoing the traditional new birthday portrait. No photo being released this year, and because of the pandemic, the June event that's known as Trooping the Color is canceled.
All right, Mark, thanks for the update. Davis Allen, time for a quick shot of sports.
Well, in a really not surprising move, quarterback Alex Smith, former number one overall pick, suffered a devastating leg injury, but managed to return last year, led the, almost said the R word, not the R word, the Washington football team to the playoff, to the playoffs. Well, 36 years old yesterday, announcing he is retiring from the game of football. Really just an overall fantastic story he has been. Congratulations on a good career. And also really cool news, hockey news. Dipping into the hockey world.
All right, bring it.
All right, Sharks forward Patrick Marleau breaking the all-time NHL record for games played yesterday against Vegas. He played in his 1,768th hockey game. He broke Gordie Howe's record.
All right.
And he did it by the age of 41. Gordie Howe was 51 by the time he set that record. So really cool. And the fact that Gordie Howe played till he was 51 in hockey is just still awesome. Anyways, that is your quick shot of sports. I'm going to go ahead and roll this into your traffic because we are seeing delays along Garcon Point Bridge northbound. As soon as you get on the bridge, expect it to be slow moving. It's going to stay that way until you get through the toll plaza. And then it should check in clear from there. I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. Also the front gate and back gates of Advanced Pensacola checking in clear. Gulf Beach Highway and Blue Angel Parkway, as well as Highway 98 on the west side of Pensacola, reporting no delays. I'm Davis Allen with the traffic on the fives.
Here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Time for future news. Davis and I tell you what's going to happen before it happens. Veterans Memorial Park. The mayor slash the city is being sued over the portable restrooms, the trailer that was wanting to be put in there. What's going to be the outcome here? Is that portable trailer actually ever going to sit on that slab at Admiral Mason Park?
I don't think so.
I also don't think so. I think that it's always going to have to be over on the actual Veterans Memorial Park side. Will we get a permanent restroom there?
Yes.
I really want that to be the case. Everybody wants that to be the case. Is Joe Buck going to be on Jeopardy?
Yes.
Yeah, I like this idea.
I think he'd be good at it, too.
That makes sense. After the debacle that led to the FedEx shooting where the guy could have been prohibited from having weapons because of red flag laws, but he never had the judicial hearing, will we see the emphasis on red flag laws fade?
I don't think so.
No, I also don't think so. They're going to say we just need to do it better. Vax passports, the ban on those has been added to the emergency bill. Will that pass?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's going to. And will Dollar General be sold out of beer today?
No.
People are going to be in there asking them, we heard about it. Andrew said you got the beer. Where's the beer?